La vie en rose. Quand il me prend dans ses bras, il me parle tout bas, je vois la vie en rose. Il me dit des mots d'amour, des mots de tous les jours, et ça me fait quelque chose. Il est entré dans mon cœur une part de bonheur dont je connais la cause. C'est lui pour moi, moi pour lui dans la vie. Il me l'a dit, me l'a juré, pour la vie. Oh, et dès que je l'aperçois, alors je sens en moi mon cœur qui bat, des yeux qui font baisser les miens, un rire qui se perd sur sa bouche. Voilà le portrait sans retouche de l'homme auquel j'appartiens. Quand il me prend dans ses bras, il me parle tout bas, je vois la vie en rose. Il me dit des mots d'amour, des mots de tous les jours, et ça me fait quelque chose. Il est entré dans mon cœur une part de bonheur dont je connais la cause. C'est lui pour moi, moi pour lui dans la vie. Il me l'a dit, l'a juré, pour la vie. Oh, et dès que je l'aperçois, alors je sens en moi mon cœur qui...
We must begin with a few words about France, which on Friday suffered the deadliest attack on its soil since World War II. Look, it's hardly been 48 hours, and much is still unknown. But there are a few things we can say for certain, and this is when it actually helps to be on HBO, where those things can be said without restraint. Because after the many necessary and appropriate moments of silence, I'd like to offer you a moment of premium cable profanity. So here is where things stand. First, as of now, we know this attack was carried out by gigantic fucking arseholes. Unconscionable, flaming arseholes. Possibly working with other fucking arseholes. Definitely working in service of an ideology of pure arseholery. Second, and this goes almost without saying, fuck these arseholes. Fuck them, if I may say, sideways. And third, it is important to remember, nothing about what these arseholes are trying to do is going to work. France is going to endure, and I'll tell you why. If you're in a war of culture and lifestyle with France, good fucking luck. Because go ahead, bring your bankrupt ideology. They'll bring Jean-Paul Sartre, Edith Piaf, fine wine, Gauloise cigarettes, Camus, Camembert, Madeleines, Macarons, Marcel Proust, and the fucking Croquembouche. The Croquembouche. You just brought a philosophy of rigorous self-abnegation to a pastry fight, my friend. You are fucked. That is a French freedom tower. So to the people of France, our thoughts are truly with you, and I do not doubt there'll be more to say on all of this as events unspool. But for now, we are going to continue.
So hello and welcome. You are here for yet another episode of This Conversation Rocks. I'm Diane in Alaska.
And I'm Todd in Los Angeles.
I wanted to talk just a tiny bit about how we got to today's episode. And basically, it came from your comment on something that I had said. I said, well, obviously, we need to talk about Paris. What else should we talk about? And you said...
Yeah, nothing goes well with terror.
Exactly. So that's kind of where we get today's episode from. I agree, there's not really much that you can talk about once you start down the rabbit hole of Paris. So I'm looking at my notes for the episode, and I'm thinking about just everything I've read to kind of get ready for this episode, and I'm still so blown away. I feel like we've bit off a lot to chew.
Well, it depends on how you want to look at it, right? Because, I mean, first and foremost, I do not want to do anything that gives yet more attention to these assholes, right? I mean, let's talk about what happened. Let's talk about, you know, what does it mean? But one of the bigger problems, I feel like, is that whenever the media covers something like this, it's just encouraging other people to go out and do something equally stupid.
And I think we're definitely, unfortunately, going to see that. And right. I think it fits into the conservative narrative, unfortunately.
And I understand that, you know, our 13 listeners, none of whom are going to be encouraged to go out and blow themselves up by this. But one thing I would love to see in the media coverage is, who gives a fuck what the guy's name was? Asshole one planned this thing, you know, and died when the Paris police found him and went to get him. Okay, that's great. Just strike him from the rolls.
It's kind of the philosophy that people are trying to take with other things, like not sharing video of James Foley's beheading and not giving attention or names to people who are mass shooters in other situations.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have to tell you, and this kind of goes in the same vein, I have been disturbed by my own reaction to this whole situation.
How so?
I've gotten upset by how upset I am. Does that sound crazy? Like, I think about the arguments that I've gotten into on social media, and I think about some of the things that I've written and shared on social media, and I'm like, you know, I'm just getting angrier, and it's not serving me, and it's fueling all of this negativity. And that's not healthy.
Right.
So, I mean, it's in keeping with what you've said.
It's what, you know, so here's one of the things, right? I doubt there are many things that can get as much agreement across the board as something like this.
Right.
This is bad. Somebody killing themselves, killing 130, I think it's 130, might be more now.
Yeah, last I saw it was up to 130, not including the killers.
Yeah, 130 people dead in what is, you know, ultimately futile and stupid act to try to, I don't know, bring attention to their cause or whatever. But, you know, I think we all agree across, not just across the political spectrum in the United States, but across, you know, most of the world, that this is bullshit.
Yeah.
And, you know, not to celebrate these guys and not to, you know, as they say, let the terrorists win. But so the question is, what does that really mean? And, you know, to me, part of it is just going on with our lives, because this shit, unfortunately, it's going to continue to happen.
I agree.
But it's not worth all of the political bickering that comes out of it. I mean, you know, that's the thing that's just amazing to me. You know, and we're going to talk a little bit more about, you know, Trump and his Muslim database registration.
Right. And I'm going to share some interesting observations about this rhetoric, too, that I've read over the past few days.
None of that addresses the actual issues. And the actual issues are simply that the world is a fucking mess, and there are crazy people in it, and there's not... At the end of the day, we cannot give up everything trying to protect ourselves from the crazies when the crazies are such a small, small, small minority.
Right. And who was it? Was it Ben Franklin? I think I may be quoting him, who said, when you give up liberty in the name of security, you deserve neither.
And it is those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety.
Okay, so I think that's actually a really appropriate way to segue right into Paris, because even in the face of these attacks, days later, Parisians were dining outside, they were at their cafes, they were at their bars, and they were defiant. I think that it's beautiful. They are not trading their security for... They're not trading their liberty for security.
No, and we should learn that lesson, too.
We should. We're obviously debating that lesson a lot right now. So should we roll into Act 1?
Sure.
So Act 1, obviously, is Paris. And I actually wanted to... I found something that I thought was really perfect, and it's kind of, I don't know, possibly in keeping with your opening with John Oliver, which I think was fantastic. This is ostensibly a letter that was submitted to a newspaper in London. Now, I'm going to be somewhat suspicious about the source, but I'll read it anyway because I thought it was a good observation. So this is supposedly written by K.N. Al-Saba from London. Dear sir, Iran is backing Assad. Gulf states are against Assad. Assad is the Muslim Brotherhood. Or I'm sorry, Assad is against the Muslim Brotherhood. Muslim Brotherhood and Obama are against General Assisi. But Gulf states are pro-Sisi, which means that they are against the Muslim Brotherhood. Iran is pro-Hamas, but Hamas is backing the Muslim Brotherhood. Obama is backing Muslim Brotherhood, yet Hamas is against the U.S. Gulf states are pro-U.S., but Turkey is with Gulf states against Assad, yet Turkey is pro-Muslim Brotherhood against General Sisi. And General Sisi is being backed by the Gulf states. Welcome to the Middle East and have a nice day. Which I thought was perfect, because I have spent a lot of time thinking about this episode and a lot of time going down various rabbit holes this week. And I feel like that pretty much sums up what I know about the Middle East, which is nothing. So I've got just, like, the basics about Paris. I don't know if you want me to talk about those.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
So, you know, the basics are, this is what we know, and I read this morning, so hopefully this is up to date. We know there were 8 militants, there were possibly 9. There were 3 coordinated attacks in Paris last week. One, which was the first attack, was 2 suicide bombers outside of a soccer game at the Stade de France. There were 2 bars and 2 restaurants targeted, again, by militant gunmen. And then the Bataclan Concert Hall, which ironically was the site of a concert by an American heavy metal band, was also attacked. So in these 3 orchestrated attacks by 9 apparently coordinated individuals, 130 people were killed, and the last count I saw for injured was 352.
Makes it, you know, a really bad attack.
Absolutely. The one of the articles that I saw, you know, a lot of people are trying to draw parallels between this and 9/11, and one of the authors that I was reading said actually the closest parallel are the attacks in Mumbai in 2008.
Sure.
And ISIS or ISIL or Daesh, and we'll talk a little bit about language, I think, claimed responsibility right shortly after the attacks occurred and said that they were taking it to Paris because Paris was, quote, the capital of prostitution and obscenity. I know, which totally fits the whole, they hate us for our freedoms, they hate us for our culture, blah, blah, blah. But
I'm just reminded of the Pat Robertson thing about Katrina hit
because
New
of
Orleans.
The pagans and women or women's lib?
No, it was because of our tolerance of homosexuality.
I get his riff so mixed up because he just can't decide who's responsible for the ills of the world.
That's totally true, but the thing is that it is meaningless, right?
Right.
You know, to say that Paris is the, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah, the debauch, the debauch center of the universe or whatever. I mean, it's just, you know, freaking nonsense. And it does show, it shows a really narrow understanding of these guys that are attacking us. Their worldview is so narrow. They have no understanding of Paris as this vibrant city
of enlightenment.
And everything. You know, but you know, of course that might be part of the problem is the enlightenment. But also that, you know, the belief was that blowing up the Twin Towers here in the United States was somehow going to make a difference. It didn't change anything.
I think, if anything, it made us a little more fearful at the end of the day, but that's really all it's changed.
It had no impact on our economy. It had no impact, noticeable impact on anything, right? We rebuilt, you know, we moved on. The same thing's going to happen in Paris. Same thing happened in London. Same thing, you know, they're trying to do in Mumbai, but they keep getting attacked.
Right.
You know, but the truth of the matter is people are just going to continue on with their lives and not really worry about it too much.
So
they killed 100, because I mean, I don't want to sound callous in the slightest.
Right.
But they killed 136 people in Paris, a city of how many millions?
Right. Out of a planet of 7 billion.
Right.
Right. Well, so I don't know how we deal with the political reality in the U.S. right now, which is that there are some people who apparently don't understand that this is the new normal, you know?
But it's not normal. but it's not out of whack either, right? Terrorist things have been happening all over the world forever. But right. let's just go back to the 70s, you know, when you got the Bader-Meinhof gang running around in Germany, in the Red Brigades, you know, and the so-called leftist terrorists, you know, that was terrorism that happened in the 70s.
Right. Well, and I mean, when you look at it, I mean, it really is the new normal. The Middle East, this happens every day. I mean, when the IRA was active in Ireland, this happened on a regular basis. You know, so I just, the people who are screaming and finger pointing and saying that this is somehow indicative of a threat to the United States, I think are so, I don't know, short-sighted. They have the same sort short-sightedness and lack of vision that you cited in the attackers.
Absolutely. This very narrow worldview that makes absolutely no sense when you think about it for any length of time. And because, by the way, I'm going to keep going back to this every time in these kinds of conversations. The second worst terrorist attack in the United States was...
I'm going to say Oklahoma City. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Christian, white.
Hate. Male. You know. Yeah. Anglo-Saxon. Right. You know, it just before that, we had the guy running around trying to kill off all the abortion doctors.
Right.
You know, bombing the Olympics back in... When was that?
I think it was 94, wasn't it?
94, yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, just this shit happens, and... We shouldn't freak out about it. We should be angry about it. We should obviously continue to try to bolster our police so that we have the ability to deal with this stuff, but we should never give up our liberty to do that.
Right.
And, you know, of course, in the United States, we did it. It was called the Patriot Act. And the NSA took it to a whole another level with their freaking spying program, which they deny they're still doing, but we all know is bullshit.
The people who are screaming about loss of liberty and concern about their freedoms, and I don't hear them talking about things like that.
No, they're talking about some mythical monster known as the Obama administration who's going to come get their guns. Which,
right.
That's not how this is going to work, ever. But again, the thing in Paris just preys on all the fears of people who don't take the time to take a look at it and go, okay, what really happened?
Well,
and it's horrible, because anytime people are killed, it's horrible. But somebody's going to have to really explain to me, other than maybe the magnitude, the difference between what happened in Paris and, I don't know, what happened at Sandy Hook or what happened at Columbine.
Right.
What happened anytime we have a mass shooting in the United States. We don't talk about it as an act of terrorism, but what is it? I mean, other than an act of terror when somebody goes on a rampage. And the other thing is it always comes down to this. The guys who go on the rampages, they're all fucking crazy. You know, they might not feel that they're crazy, but, you know, fuck them. You know, and if you believe that blowing yourself up will get you to heaven, you're fucking crazy.
And who wants to be in a heaven like that anyway?
You know, if you believe that it is right to walk into a movie theater and spray it down, you're crazy.
Yeah.
And nobody ever wants to talk about the fact that, you know, this is just the work of crazy people, and we should do something about crazy. We should do something about, shouldn't go like Trump, who, by the way, is falling in the polls because, you know, even the United States is getting a little tired of his insanity. But, you know.
God, I hope so, because the last time I heard, he was still up in the polls. So
no, just before we started, I was looking.
Oh, good.
Because, you know, because Trump came out and said, every Muslim in the United States should be registered in the database.
And carry papers. And wear some sort of distinguishing mark. Where have we heard that before?
Fucking Hitler Germany much?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, or, I don't know, just in the United States history, internment of all Japanese Americans.
Right.
You know, during World War II. God, I hate George Santayana. I think he was a shitty philosopher, but, you know, he was right in his one statement. Those that do not remember the past are doomed to repeat it. And this is the thing that just drives me crazy in all of this, is we're just repeating this time and time again by going nuts, freaking the fuck out. Again, 130 people are dead. That is horrible. Let's deal with the 130 people who died. Let's deal with that. Clearly, the French are dealing with retaliating against ISIS. And I apologize. I need to start calling those guys ISIL, because apparently Americans can't figure out that ISIS is just a freaking anacronym. you know.
Right. Anyone who hears ISIS instantly assumes we're having this conversation. I did want to talk a little bit about that. So we should say ISIL or we should say Daesh. Daesh or Daesh?
I have no idea.
I don't either. So we'll say ISIL for right now.
First of all, ISIS, ISIL, these are the English translations, right? ISIL.
Daesh is the appropriate word in the language, right?
Probably.
Yeah.
But ISIL is the Islamic State of the Levant, right? That's what that stands for.
Okay.
So, okay, we'll go with that.
Okay. Works for me.
Whatever the fuck they think that means, we're going to go with that. You know, ISIL. You know, so ISIL managed to pull off this attack and kill some people, and it's horrible. But they have misjudged the fact that the French are not going to do something about it. The French just moved their aircraft carrier into the Gulf, and they're going to bomb the shit out of people over this.
I'm glad you brought that up, because they also are talking about, quote, forming a grand coalition with the U.S. and Russia. And one of the things that I had read was, why the hell would ISIL want to get three of the most powerful countries on the planet in agreement with each other?
It's just a mistake they've made.
Yeah. Right?
They thought the prevailing wisdom is that there was a thought by ISIL that the European powers are weak.
And that they would not answer back with force.
Yeah, would not be able to or whatever. Yeah. It's like, motherfucker, it's France. It's, you know, and I don't recommend you try Germany next. We all have armies. Now, France's army is not the size of the United States, but they don't need it to be. Because you guys are not a big threat to the world. You're a small threat to the world. Killing people in ISIL is not exactly complicated, right? It's just airstrikes and bombs, and we kill more people.
Right.
And unfortunately, though, that's just going to, the cycle continues, but...
Well, so two things I want to bring up, and I'm glad you said that. One is that right now we are blaming this on Syria, and we're going to talk a little more about that, but it appears to have originated in Brussels. It appears to have been planned in Brussels.
Right. The whole Syrian thing is a false flag argument.
Right. They don't even know for sure that the one Syrian passport that was found near an attacker's body is actually a legitimate passport or not.
No, it was forged. But at least that's the reports I've heard. But again,
what I've read as well.
We're using that in the United States on the GOP side to deny refugees from Syria.
Right. We're using it as a shorthand for our fear.
Right, which is bullshit, because let's be honest about who the Syrian refugees are. These are people that do not support the Assad regime, nor are they people who support ISIL.
Right, they just are getting the hell out of there because they want some degree of safety somewhere.
Right, doesn't that sound like, you know, normal human beings?
Yeah, normal human behavior, absolutely. Right.
You know, plus the thing is that Syrian refugees are pretty educated. There's a vibrant technical industry in Syria before this all went to hell. These are actually the people we want, guys.
Right. But you kind of brought another thing up that I wanted to talk about, which is language. And I read a good essay this morning about whether or not we should be talking about Paris in terms of radical Islam and violent extremism. And of course, I err on the side of violent extremism, because I believe that people of any belief system are capable of violent extremes, including Buddhists, as we saw in, what was it, Burma?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's interesting to me that we're debating these semantics, but I do think to a certain degree they're important. Jonathan Chait from New York Magazine said that when we use violent extremism versus radical Islam, when we talk about Islam and make anti-Islamic rhetoric out of all of this, what we're really doing is reinforcing ISIL's message that Christians and Muslims are engaged in this life or death struggle that is not going to be resolved. So what we're really doing when we point the finger at Islam and when we point the finger at all Muslims, we're just reinforcing ISIL's message.
Yeah, it would be similar to me saying that all neurosurgeons are complete fucking retards just from the actions of Ben Carson.
Right. or that all liberals are angry podcasters due to our actions. I don't know. I mean, this probably isn't a clean Act 1, Act 2, Act 3. It's not a clean discussion, you know, which I think is fair. That said, I am going to walk us a little bit toward Act 2, which is what was overshadowed by Paris, because I wanted to talk a little bit about the events around the world that were overshadowed by what happened in Paris, but I also wanted to talk a little bit about some of the concepts that we are missing in our response to Paris.
All right.
So, you know, first of all, Beirut was attacked by a suicide bomber one day prior to Paris, and they think that about 43 people were killed. And it was Sunni Muslims attacking a Shiite neighborhood. So I want to talk a little bit about Sunnis and Shias. ISIL also claimed responsibility for downing that Russian jet over Egypt, and I think it was 224 people who were killed there, and it was substantiated, finally, that claim during the whole aftermath of Paris.
Right.
And so, you know, one of the things that I read and that I wanted to share is that attacks like Paris, or any of these other attacks, are intended to scare people and spark civil conflict, which is exactly what it's done in our country.
Yeah, and the other thing, and I hate to be this cynical, but the other thing about attacking a place like Paris is that you're going to get worldwide media attention because, well, let's face it, American broadcasters are more than willing to go to Paris, camp out for a week and a half, 2 weeks, for no apparent fucking reason.
Well, you know, and I don't want to call people out too much on the racist thing, but they look like us. They look like most of us. They're white,
sure.
They're fairly well educated, they have the same eating habits that we do. They look like us.
Let's be honest, right? The Lebanon has been the Lebanon for so long that nobody even cares.
Right.
Even though, you know, the truth of the matter is Beirut has been recovering for quite a while. And, you know, this is really, you know, it should be notable when somebody does something like that in Beirut, just like it is when somebody does that in Paris. It should always be a big deal. You know, and unfortunately the Russians, right, they've brought themselves up so much bad will in the world in the last several years that, you know, the fact that their plane got bombed and 224 of their people died, rest of the world didn't really give a shit. We should.
I think you're right. And I mean, I think that people have so many bad feelings about Putin. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Although he is somewhat being recast by this whole anti-ISIL coalition.
Yeah, he's using it to look like a hero.
Yeah.
And you know, and he's Putin.
Yeah.
Right? He's so not a hero.
So, like some of our anti-heroes in our culture, he's going to trade on whatever he can.
Oh, sure. You know, and he looks good, right? I mean, this guy is far more Clint Eastwood than freaking Ronald Reagan ever was. He's, you know, and Putin's a real deal. Putin kills people. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's a great comparison. I hadn't really thought about it that way before, but I think that's a really good comparison.
But so, yeah, all these things that were overshadowed are all very important, and it all comes down to, yeah, absolutely, some racism, some we don't give a fuck about you, and
right.
And the truth of the matter is Paris is a great place to go cover shit, you know?
Right, because why would
Lebanon
you want to
is
hang
not.
Out? I was going to say, why would you want to hang out in Beirut if you can go have an espresso at a cafe after you file your news report?
Yeah. It's the truth, right? You know, and this is the thing people really don't maybe understand, or maybe they do, and they fear it so much and stuff. I mean, bad shit happens every day. Colombia, Argentina, Peru, anywhere in the Middle East, most cities in the United States.
Right.
Again, going back to your point about the new normal, it's like this has always been normal. It's just 20 years ago, if you blew something up in Paris.
That was a big deal.
It was a big deal, but we wouldn't have had 10 million reporters on the scene.
And we wouldn't have had instantaneous feedback or instantaneous tape of the raids on terrorist cells and those kinds of things.
Right, and yeah. just the ongoing media coverage, which really serves... The problem with the media coverage after any of these disasters is that, first of all, nobody knows what the fuck happened. It's going to take at least a week to figure out
right.
that much, right? And the truth is, you won't really know what happened for months, you know, until the police and everybody else had a chance to sift through it and actually do their job. But we just, we're there and there's nothing to report, so we just keep reporting the same crap and just keep hammering it in. And it's interesting, right, because the effect works really well when you're talking about a terrorist thing. Tends to make the networks look really stupid when they go cover a hurricane. You know?
Good point.
But, I mean, they're trying to... I'm not blaming the media. The media is trying to make money by selling eyeball, you know, selling to eyeballs. They have to. That's the way they stay in business.
Right. Well, they're doing the job that we've assigned to them. So, in part, we're just as responsible as they are.
But the thing is that we don't need 24-hour coverage of this stuff.
Right.
Because, you know, the truth of the matter is, what you know tonight, you can live with knowing that until tomorrow night. Because it's not going to change anything. It's not going to change anything, you know, to sit there and get updates every hour, on the hour, on the half hour. Lord, you know, if you listen to AM radio, it's on the 5.
Well, and I think that increases our angst around these kinds of things. I mean, I definitely saw it on social media this week. And I'm ashamed to say I participated in it on social media this week. But that constant reviving the story and bringing it up again and again and again and again, all it serves to do is whip people into a bigger frenzy.
And here's the thing, right? We're afraid, we get afraid, we're very afraid. But according to 2011 data, the chances of being attacked in a terrorist by a terrorist are roughly 1 in 20 million. You have a 1 in 800,000 chance of drowning in your own bathtub.
Oh, that is really funny.
1 in 19,000 chance of losing your life in an automobile accident.
Yeah.
1 in 99,000 of dying in a building fire, which, you know, that's pretty good, too. Being struck by lightning, 5.5 million. Right, wow. So terrorist attack is even 4 times less likely than getting hit by lightning.
I was just going to say that you're 4 times more likely to be struck by lightning. Okay. Well, that puts it into perspective a little bit, doesn't it?
And this is the thing, going back to, we're trading our liberty for safety, right? Right. You're not safe today, right? We are pretty safe today if your odds are only 1 in 20 million. You know, you're going to die of freaking, you know, breast cancer, colon cancer, way higher rate than that, right?
Absolutely.
You know, you're going to die of old age 100% of the time, you know? Right? We're all going to die, America. Sorry, hate to break it to you.
And only 1 in 20 million of you has a chance of being hit by a terrorist, so...
Right, and, you know, and there's some serious things that you could probably do to decrease those odds. Stay out in the Middle East probably decreases.
Right.
Good.
Well, you know, and we are, and we'll talk about this in Act 3, such as it is, but we are doing things already to decrease those odds. So, you know, another thing that I kind of wanted to talk about, because I realized this morning that I didn't know a whole lot about it, is the whole Sunni-Shia divide. I suspect you're probably much more sanguine about it than I am, because you are... You're a better political reader than I am, although I'm catching up. So
you want to talk about the difference between the Sunnis and the Shias?
Well, yeah, a little bit, because I was like,
it's really analogous to the difference between Protestants and Catholics,
right?
And the European wars that resulted from the split.
So, you know, just for people who don't know, because I didn't realize or I didn't consciously know, but ISIL is an extremist Sunni group. I think it's important for us to realize as Americans that when we disavowed the Ba'athist government, the Ba'athist officials in Iran, or sorry, not Iran, Iraq, excuse me, that we actually grew the ranks of disaffected Sunnis, and especially disaffected militant Sunnis. So we actually, in our war against Iraq, contributed to groups like ISIL. Iran is a Shia government. And you're right. I mean, the basic difference is that there were two different groups to succeed the Prophet Muhammad when he died in 632.
Right. One's split into... One's based off a cousin and one's based off of an uncle or something like that.
One is based off of a cousin and one is based off of a good friend who was also married to Muhammad's daughter, Aisha. And that's the Sunni group. And that's actually the group that became dominant. So Sunnis are about 80% of today's Muslims and Shia are about 20% of today's Muslims. And the Shia actually...
Except for Iran, which is...
Right, which is a Muslim state. Or, I'm sorry, a Shia state.
95% Shia.
But except in places... Except in Iran, let's say. You know, in other places, the Shia are kind of considered the oppressed and maligned minority.
Right, well, they certainly were in Iran. Or, I mean, Iraq.
Right.
Under Saddam.
And so...
The repression of the Ba'athist Party, which was, yeah.
Right.
Well, Sunni.
So, you know, I think that we lose things like that in conversations about Muslims as an entire unit and about all Muslims as terrorists and those kinds of things, which, I mean, those are the kinds of comments that are coming out of the conversation around Paris. So I did want to include that in my overshadowed by Paris observations, is just that we don't even understand the workings of Islam. We as a culture, Americans, don't understand, generally speaking, how it's broken down and what these different things mean. And I don't know. I just thought it was good education. I thought it was good things for people to be aware of.
Right. Well, and this is the thing that really is important for people to understand and to understand how poor a job the United States has done with dealing with these cultures, you know, in the last century. There was no reason on earth to ever believe that Saddam Hussein, the leader of a Sunni government, would ever be in bed
with a Shia government.
Right. You know, and the fact that Iraq was this huge hedge against Iran, because Iran was and is the Shia power, right? The amount of chaos that we contribute to by not understanding who all these players are, what it means, and everything. People in the United States in particular will say, well, you know, we got past all that stuff, you know, Catholics and prods and everything. We got past that stuff a long time ago.
No, we haven't.
My God, no. You know, I mean, the IRA and the Brits, you know, just declared peace, you know, really, what, 20 years ago?
Right.
But the other thing, too, is that most of the time, and this is even true in the Middle East, in my opinion, most of the time, the religious stuff is just the hyperbole used to whip people into, you know, doing stuff they wouldn't normally do, which is kill other people. Yeah, the religion is a good way to get people to do it, as it's always been.
Well, and I was just going to say, and how easy is it to do that when you're 80% of a population, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, the Sunnis were in power, right, in Iraq, and then they weren't.
And know? Very suddenly and overnight, because of the action that we took there.
Yeah.
And we actually made promises to the Ba'athists that we did not uphold.
No, and anybody who was part of the Ba'athist Party was immediately kicked out of government and the armed forces and stuff, you know.
Which we said we were not going to do the de-Ba'athification of Iraq, and we did.
Right.
So I just want to go back to, we contributed to this. And I also want to go back to the point that this kind of us against them conversation sparks civil war and division within our own country. It sparks civil conflict and it plays into what ISIL wants.
Yeah. Because the question is always who the hell are we?
Yeah.
And who is them?
Yeah.
Because the problem is if we start going with, well, we're people who agree. Okay. That's, you know, you're only going to have a handful of people who truly agree with you and your opinion. Yeah. There's only 8 people apparently who agree with us. You know? But this is where you start. This is the problem. This is where you start having the conversation, not where you end the conversation.
Right.
And everybody now wants to end the conversation on, well, if you disagree with me, you are a secret Muslim, pinko, communist, Hitler following.
And you are dead to me.
Yeah.
Although I have to say, I mean, I engaged in a little bit of that too. I mean.
Well, because the thing is, as soon as somebody assaults your ideas, your beliefs, you're going to defend them. I mean, this is the thing. We're all going to defend what we believe. And I'm not asking people not to defend what they believe. I am asking people to realize that just because you can defend what you believe doesn't fucking matter. It does not matter if we can't come up with something that is a compromise in our democracy to maintain our democracy. Everybody on the right these days, see, there I go right there, right? I'm going to just lump everybody on the right.
No, I totally understand.
Okay, let me be specific. Guys in the clown, leading the clown
car. So that would be Donald Trump and Ben Carson. Guys driving. Yeah.
You know, along with Ted Cruz, you know, strapped to the hood like a fucking deer. Or, you know, Sarah Palin trying to jump back in the car or any of that.
But they threw Bobby Jindal out the back.
Well, it's because he's not one of them.
Right. That's true. He is brown.
Yeah. So. I mean, you know.
We're horrible. We're going to hell. Okay, keep going. Sorry.
Wait, lost thread of that rant. Okay, let's try this again. You know, but just because, you know, so you got these guys who were calling, who these guys are willing to sacrifice your liberty for non-existent safety. By the way, not allowing any Syrians into the country isn't going to prevent the next terrorist attack in the United States.
You know,
because the next terrorist attack in the United States is not likely to be somebody from the Middle East with a fucking grudge as much as it's likely to be some crazy with a high-powered automatic weapon walks into a freaking 7-Eleven next time or whatever, right?
Or middle school or concert or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, we have to be honest about what our problems really are and figure out how do we deal with the problems that we really have, not look for problems we don't have, right? And what we don't have right now is, you know, Syrians coming to this country to blow shit up. That's not a real problem.
Well, you know,
that's no more real. And I will blame anybody who does the demagoguery bullshit. Again, most right now it's these guys in the clown car, but they're not the only ones by any stretch. But as soon as you start doing the demagoguery bullshit, you know, where Sharia law is going to be imposed in this country if we're not vigilant. Huh?
I know. I don't get that.
I tell you what, the odds of Sharia law being imposed in this country are pretty slim, but I'll tell you what is likely to happen. Yet again, another fucking piece of legislation that will demand to know what sex you were born as before I let you into my bathroom. Which is, you know, an absurdist problem that only would exist in a first world nation that doesn't have better shit to do.
No kidding. Yeah, Ben Carson, by the way, said he doesn't want to pee next to somebody who's transgendered.
Because he's going to know.
Right. Well, he is a surgeon.
And he's going to know. He just takes one look at it. He's just. So here's the funny thing, right? Is that if Ben Carson is standing in a bathroom peeing next to somebody who's transgendered, he's peeing next to a woman who became a man.
Who ultimately, at the end of the day, your point exactly, is a man.
Right.
Get over it.
You know,
we're really far off the topic. We went off the rails again, didn't we? I'm sorry. I drug us there.
No. This is the point. This is the point of the podcast. This is the meta point.
Those rabbit holes.
No, it's that it all ties together because we in the United States don't spend enough time using critical thinking as much as we use, oh my God, Trump said, ah!
Or, oh my God, that person's in my bathroom.
They're going to come get my guns. Ah!
So I guess this is probably as good a time as any to move on to Act 3, which I kind of felt like it was really all about our backlash against Syria. And I stole from The Walking Dead. I decided that we'd call Act 3 Always Accountable, which was the title of last week's episode of The Walking Dead. Because it's people trying to make other people accountable, or people trying to make other people somehow responsible for their decisions or their process or whatever. I think that we may always pay for our decisions, but we're not always accountable for our decisions, you know?
In the United States, we're never accountable for our decisions.
So the backlash against Syrians. You know, we talked a little bit about how there was that passport that many of us believe was forged. Planted in Paris.
Well, according to the news reports, yeah, it was just right. A forged passport. So,
you know, unfortunately, the Syrian refugee crisis has become inexplicably linked with Paris because of the discussion that's happened over the last week and a half, 2 weeks. No, last week about. A couple of things I just wanted to say. You know, the Syrian refugee crisis is the biggest refugee crisis that we have experienced as a planet since World War II. And what we're really talking about, what you and I are really talking about, are real people fleeing a country that's been devastated by a conflict that they didn't even want to take sides in. They just want to live their lives.
Right.
You know, I read today that the Syrian life expectancy has dropped from 74.7 years of age in 2005 to 55.7 years today. So they've shaved essentially 20 years off of the life expectancy of someone who is Syrian because of the refugee crisis, because of the war, because of the things that are happening to these refugees when they try to leave. And those are the people that we're finger pointing at, you know? Those are the people that we're blaming.
Yeah, and you know, and you got Donald Trump saying we got to register all Muslims, and then, right. And then of course that didn't actually. Apparently, that was actually a step too far. So he's actually, you know, in
God,
the last 72
so.
Hours backed off of that. I find it hilarious that that's the step too far. But you know, hey, good for us.
Whatever it takes, right?
Yeah, we'll take anything these days, you know. But you know, Ben Carson, all of them are basically saying we shouldn't allow any of them in.
Yeah.
You know, they've even said, even the Christians, we don't want them either.
Yeah, so Ben Carson says none, period. Ted Cruz right. said they can come in if they prove that they're Christian.
And I want to...
Chris Christie said he wouldn't take anybody, not even a 5-year-old Syrian toddler.
Because he's a fucking prick.
Yeah. Donald Trump, or Trump, now this is interesting, he claimed that we're taking in hundreds of thousands of Syrian refugees, and I just want to point out, and this is actually from the UN High Commission on Refugees, in between 2012 and September of 2015, the U.S. had taken in 1,854 Syrian refugees, not hundreds of thousands. Germany had taken in 991,000.
Yeah.
I mean, so we've taken in 2,000, Germany's taken in 90,000 Syrian refugees since 2012. And we're talking about an estimated 4 million people that have been displaced by the Syrian civil war. 4 million people. You know, one of the points that I want to make, just in terms of discussing Syria and hopefully stopping the finger pointing or I don't know, working productively against the finger pointing, is that people in the U.S. need to understand that we have the most rigorous vetting process of refugees on the planet. It takes 2 years to be vetted if you apply for refugee status.
Yeah, and to actually become a citizen in this country, forget about it.
Right, and something like, I don't even remember the number, but the number of people who apply and the number of people who are actually approved for refugee status is, it's so small. The number of people who are approved as compared to the number of people who apply. The other thing that we really need to think about is that we're looking at two different things. So the people who are scared of Syrian refugees, they distrust the process. They distrust the vetting process. They distrust the people.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second, people. First of all, to become a Syrian refugee in the United States, well, first of all, you would have had to have fled Syria. Second of all, you would have had to have gotten into the system. And you would have been vetted all the way through Europe before you're going to get a shot at coming to the United States. And by the way, do you think we're just like, oh, sure, you're a Syrian.
Come on in.
Come on in. Yeah. No, we're going to be like, Do you have family here? Yes. Okay, you get a priority, right? Do you have a skill that we could actually use? Yes. Okay, you get a priority. You know, it's not like, you know, are you a male of combat age traveling by himself? Yeah, that you're not getting in.
And I want to say that it's something like 2% of Syrian refugees who actually fit that profile, by the way.
Yeah.
Men of combat age with combat experience and no families who are traveling on their own.
Right. You know, those are the guys who are going to get profiled the highest. And,
right. And least likely to get in.
Least likely to get in, yes.
We
don't trust our own government, and the reason we don't trust our own government is because the GOP has spent fucking 30 years or more telling you that you shouldn't trust your own fucking government. I'm not saying be blind, be stupid, or anything, because, you know, it's still run by people. But the system works more often than it doesn't, and the reason you can tell is because we're still here.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's a horrible, horrible thing. The number of people, again, who have been displaced and the number of people that we are potentially turning our backs on, it's terrifying. Another thing that I wanted to talk about in terms of accountability is that I read an awesome essay in Esquire by a guy named Charles Pierce. And his point is, in order to prevent terrorism, we need to hold the oligarchies of the Gulf responsible. We need to hold them accountable. And he's talking about us actually holding our allies in the Gulf accountable, saying, Saudi Arabia, you financed these terror campaigns. You need to take some responsibility. Saying to Qatar, where people have gotten a tremendous amount of funding for these terrorist campaigns, you need to stand up and take responsibility. And we're not doing that because it's convenient for us to overlook those states because they give us money, they buy oil from us, oil from them.
Going back to what you said at the beginning with, I support so-and-so, but that makes me opposed by such-and-such, right. But they're actually okay with these guys because these guys are against this dude. But this dude, he's okay with me, but I can't be okay with him because I'm, And this is the insanity that is our relationship with the Middle East. We prop up the Saudi government. We buy oil from the Saudis. They turn around and give that money back to us for defense contracts so that they can repress their own people.
Which makes them some of the worst religious offenders on the planet, I just might point out.
Absolutely. Money from the Gulf states definitely goes to fund all this shit.
Well, you know,
but we are then funding our own shit.
Right. I mean, this is important, and this is not cutting Hillary Clinton some slack and holding her accountable. But in 2009, she signed a secret document that pointed to Saudi Arabia as being the largest source of funding for the Afghani Taliban, Al-Qaeda, and then E-Taiba, which I guess is another extremist group. So we know.
We've always known.
And we overlook it because it's convenient.
The problem is we ignore it because there's money to be made. There's money. This is the sad thing, right? There's money to be made, even if it results in the death of a few of our people. It's not money, right? You know, so it's okay.
Well, you know, and I think, and this is a point made by Charles Pearson, that Esquire article that I was talking about, but he says, and I think this is really important, as long as people are dying in Paris, no one important is dying in Riyadh.
Oh, yeah. That's absolutely something that's been going on for a long time. Right?
You know, so as long as Saudi Arabia deflects it to us, they can maintain their power.
Speculation has been for years and years had been that the Saudis were financing bin Laden just to keep him out of fucking Saudi Arabia.
And why not?
Because he would have started killing Saudi princes.
Sure, because they didn't support his ideology.
Right.
Yeah, it's just fascinating. So, I mean, I think that, you know, here we are, we're pointing to this group of people who are doing what we would hope that we could do, which is flee a war zone. We're making them responsible when actually we need to make this government that is supposedly our ally accountable.
Right. Well, I'm not going to hold my breath there either.
Yeah. No, I mean, because it's inconvenient. It's financially inconvenient. It's politically inconvenient. It's not going to happen. But I think it's a really good point.
Right. We have more leverage today than we used to, only because we're fracking the hell out of our own country.
Right.
And oil is dirt cheap in this country again.
Bernie 2016, you know, solar power.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're able to export oil. One of the key things, right, is if we want to get out of some of this craziness, we have to get to a point where we don't have to buy their oil.
Right.
Ever.
Well, and Charles Pierce also says, and I think this is really important for us to recognize as a country, and for people on both sides of the refugee divide to recognize, he says that the real way to hold people accountable in the Middle East and hold people accountable for terrorism is to follow the money, jail people who are responsible, and stop selling arms and military goods to countries that then shunt it to terrorist groups. Like, let's say Saudi Arabia. Because right. They launder money for Al-Qaeda through sanctioned charities.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's crazy. Yeah,
right, we're starting to sound like conspiracy theorists. Except for the fact that if it's actually kind of out in the open, it's not really a conspiracy, right?
Well, and you know, this is something that you have said, and I wanted to bring this up too, because Charles Pierce wrote about this in his article. It, quote, fits the narrative of demonizing the poor so no one looks at the rich and powerful. And we've talked about this again and again in other contexts. So you're right. This goes back to the meta point of what's the bigger conversation? The bigger conversation is that the stuff is all related.
Yeah.
And now we are sounding like conspiracy theorists.
But this is the thing, right? The difference between conspiracy and what happens in the world on a regular basis is that conspiracy basically requires somebody, the Illuminati or some shit, like that pulling the strings, right? Which, you know, it doesn't exist because the global elites, such as they are, they don't get along and can't agree on shit either, right? You know, this is what happens when you've got all the nations of the world in the game, and then you've got people like the United States, the former Soviet Union, you know, and some of the, and soon to be China, certainly, you know, Europe to some degree. Big boys who have a lot of power, still have a lot of power, and we've used our power collectively to try to better our own standing at the expense of everybody else.
Right. Well, and I just want to point out, and maybe this is a decent place to wrap up. I don't know. I don't know where we go from here, but to my friends on the right who are crapping their pants because people from Syria might be Muslim, to my friends on the right who are freaking out because they're convinced that the next terrorist attack in the United States is going to be funded by ISIL, Charles Pierce has this to say: it will not be an attack on your faith. It will be an attack on how you conduct your business as a sovereign state in a world full of sovereign states.
Absolutely.
This is just crazy. And I think actually it's so illustrative how confused it is, how complex it is, that you can't break it down into a simple us versus them, a simple Christian versus Muslim.
Well, that's the worst narrative there is.
You right? know, it is. Because
if it is Christian versus Muslim, then we have to burn each other to the ground.
Right. Going back to what that article that I cited earlier said, I mean, it implies that we are locked in an insoluble conflict.
Which, going back to John Oliver's rant, are you fucking kidding?
Right.
It's French culture. Go fuck yourselves. You know, France isn't going away, and that's the point tonight, right?
Right.
And France was hurt by this, but, you know, they picked up, moved right on. We've been hurt by the attacks in this country, picked up, moved right on. At the end of the day, these guys win nothing.
At the end of the day, they win if we buy into their story.
Absolutely.
At the end of the day, they win if we persecute people the way they persecute people.
If we give up essential liberty for a little temporary safety.
Yes. Absolutely.
No.
I think I'm gonna. No. I'm really gonna work on changing my language. That's one thing.
By the way, let's talk about language for just a second. To you fucking idiots in Colorado, ISIS the bookstore is a freaking New Age bookstore named after the Egyptian goddess. Has nothing to do with the acronym ISIS.
God.
Fucking idiots. So those of you who vandalized the store last week, fuck you.
Wow. I totally missed that in the mishmash that has become our media around this event. That's horrible.
It is, isn't it? I mean, yeah. It's stupid as hell.
And so what do? We vandalize a bookstore that's a place that is representative of freedom and our ideals. I mean, Right. Free exchange of ideas. We vandalize a fucking bookstore. Oh, my God.
What the fuck did they think was in sale there, man? Fucking jihadi dream catchers?
Qurans and black flags, man.
I mean... Crystals of Islamic doom.
Laugh. That's so awful.
Essential oils of nukedom. What? Oh, what a bunch of fucking morons.
Oh man. Well, I agree. You know, we said that we were going to give our new segment a rest, and we will. But maybe these guys will. Maybe they'll pop back up in our new segment at some point.
It's just, you know, it's the whole thing. Know what the fuck you're doing.
Yeah.
If you don't know what the fuck you're doing, don't do it. If you just drank mass quantities of beer and thought, hey, what I want to do is go swimming in the polar bear cage in the Anchorage Zoo. Fuck yourself, man. You know, if you decided that you're going to go vandalize a bookstore because the store says ISIS, you're an idiot. You're not a patriot. You're an idiot.
And this feeds into my narrative of how bad our classical education is in this country. How could people not know who ISIS is?
You know, I first thought that myself, but then I thought, the truth of the matter is, I can kind of understand, right? You know, Egyptian mythology isn't everybody's bag. Okay, whatever.
I know, but...
Not everybody saw the TV show in the 70s. ISIS and Shazam hour.
Right, I remember.
First of all, I want to just reiterate, ISIS, ISIL, it's an acronym. Right?
And maybe it's more appropriate for us to use Daesh. I don't know. I'm going to have to get back to you on that.
But the point being is that ISIS, ISIS, is an Egyptian goddess. I period S period I period S period are these guys that we're talking about in the Middle East.
Very good. That's an excellent way to distinguish.
So
do you want to update us? You said you had some updates on things that we had talked about previously.
Yeah, well, because when we did the old Carson episode, we did struggle, but we did find some things that we thought Carson was okay on.
Right.
Know? One of the things we said he was okay on was the minimum wage. However, Carson, you know, being Carson, he outthought us or her.
He listened to the episode.
And during the Fox financial news debate a couple weeks ago, before Paris happened, when asked about the minimum wage, he said that the minimum wage is the reason that most black people are in poverty. And that we need to educate ourselves about the minimum wage.
So I'm really not even sure what that entirely means. So are we bad because we have a minimum wage, or are we... I don't know. I don't get it. So should we pay people less? Should we pay people more?
The point being is that he's clearly actually not okay with the minimum wage now.
I know that, but I'm trying to suss out what he really means by that, and I don't get it.
Also want to report happily that David Vitter in Louisiana lost his race for the governor.
Yes, and now I'm gonna
actually
clap.
Has announced that he will be resigning from the Senate this year.
Oh, I missed that. That's good.
But the reason he's resigning from the Senate is because the Republican National Committee doesn't want to actually defend him against a Democratic challenger. They would rather have a new. Just a flat-out race.
Right, someone who doesn't have all of the Achilles heels he yeah. he has shown that he has.
Right. And then, by the way, I have no belief whatsoever that the Democrat who won the gubernatorial race in Louisiana will win in 4 years.
Right. He was just the only...
Vitter was so bad. Right. So bad that, you know, even his own party couldn't vote for him. So
and that's exactly it. You know, I saw this big thing on Huffington Post crowing about how Vitter had lost and
how it signifies the change and all this nonsense.
Right, how the Democrats should pat themselves on the back because Vitter has...
oh, my God.
Has fallen, and we now have a Democratic governor for the first time in forever in Louisiana. And I thought, no, there just wasn't anybody else to vote for.
Yeah. I mean, are we patting ourselves on the back because we've lowered the bar so far that beating a complete fucktard like Vitter right. becomes the reason that we celebrate beat Democrats?
Right.
Democratic Party just makes me want to puke on a regular basis. Huffington Post just was on the leading edge of that narrative about yes, how this signifies change, right? But what is it? It's sound and fury signifying nothing.
Yes, I agree completely. I do not think it's politically important in the long term. I think of the statement about David Vitter and nothing else.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. Let's see, what else? We talked about the ISIS store. We talked about Carson. Trump. Yeah, Trump is actually falling in the poll. Oh, Trump.
Oh dear, this sounds good. Or not good.
This was this morning, ABC's This Week on Sunday. Trump doubled down on his assertion that he saw people in New Jersey, where the real estate mogul claims there is a large Arab population, cheering as the World Trade Center came down. There were people that were cheering on the other side of New Jersey where you have large Arab populations. They were cheering at the World Trade Center as the World Trade Center came down. Trump said on Sunday, I know it might not be politically correct for you to talk about it, but there were people cheering as that building came down and as those buildings came down. And that tells you something. It was well covered at the time. He first made this claim yesterday in Birmingham, Alabama. Sorry, Alabama.
Yeah.
You guys' history kind of leads you into this dirt. But anyway, he said, I watched when the World Trade Center came tumbling down, and I watched in Jersey City, New Jersey, where thousands and thousands of people were cheering as that building was coming down.
No, I suspect they were screaming and crying like the rest of us. I don't know about you, but I watched the coverage from stem to stern, probably, again, far too much stimulus and input from the news media. I don't remember anything like that.
There were certainly in the Arab nations, there were rallies with thousands and thousands of people.
Cheering. I do recall that, but by and large, sentiment in all areas of the globe were in support of the United States.
Right.
Oh, God, he's such a creep. Well,
Trump also said on Sunday that he would bring back waterboarding if the U.S. captured ISIS members and did not rule out whether he would create a national database of Muslims.
Although he was trying to backpedal from that. So he's been embracing it and backpedaling from it simultaneously since...
Well, sure. It depends
the on registration, how, the database.
Yeah, and it depends on how red meat the audience is, right?
Speaking of how red meat the audience is, did you see that people from his campaign stop beat the shit out of a Black Lives Matter
That's right. Protester? That was the other one. And Trump basically said the guy had it coming.
And my response to that is this really the people we want to be?
Exactly. Exactly.
It disappoints me so much. And I think that you kind of brought me back around to the place that I need to go for myself, which is recognizing that the underlying emotions to the anger and the fear that we're experiencing right now, the underlying emotions are actually disappointment in the human condition and disappointment in the human race.
Particularly those of us residing in the United States.
Right, exactly. You know, some
other stuff. We're better than this.
Some other stuff that I wanted to bring up that I didn't bring up, but, you know, now is as good a time as any. It's documented that Anne Frank's dad applied for asylum in the United States twice and was refused. So, you know, if you want to play the Hitler card, let's play the Hitler card. If you want to turn your backs on people because of their religion, let's play the Hitler card. Because we are ultimately responsible for those deaths. Because we turned our back. And do we want to be on that side of history again?
Well, as I said, I hate the guy's philosophy, but he is right. Those who do not remember the past are doomed to repeat it.
Yep.
In the United States, we don't remember our fucking past as of last week.
It's because our classical education is horrible.
Absolutely, but it's horrible because we don't believe in it, right?
Right.
We don't believe in classical education in this country. Not really.
So, you know, you actually brought up another thought for me, and this is something that's completely off topic, but one of the physicians that I work with, she and I were talking this week about alternative medicine, and she said, look at the standard that we are held to as Western medical providers that is so different from the standard that our patients hold some of the alternative things that they bring into us. I'm going way down the rabbit hole here, but, you know, people will walk in and say, Dr. Oz said I should take Garcinia Cambogia, so I'm going to. And then they look at me and they're like, well, you said I should have my blood pressure under 140 over 90. You're crazy. So it just goes back to people not believing good science, not believing history, holding people who talk about science and history and things that are documented to a higher standard than people who are throwing out the bullshit.
Yeah.
We're held to a higher standard.
We're crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's what you're saying, is that we're crazy.
We are, you know, and it goes back to the, we can make anything fit our picture of how the world should be or how we see the world. You know, and speaking of Dr. Oz, this is probably as good a time as any to go into Judith's feedback, do you think?
Oh, sure, go ahead.
So Judith Kaufman had some feedback for us about the letter that I talked about in our last Fuck That Guy episode or segment. The guy who was basically dissing his Medicaid patient. And so Judith said, FYI, the letter from Dr. Starner Jones was originally circulated in 2009, according to Snopes. Since then, expanded Medicaid was adopted in 31 states. In my state, New York, I applied for insurance under the New York State Health Portal and was put into Medicaid. I could not change it. I had no choice in this. It was done automatically solely based on my income. There was no apparent way to opt out of Medicaid. So any discussion about what I have or what I wear is specious, since I did not choose Medicaid. It chose me. If any of my providers have opinions about what I am wearing or driving, etc., based on my being covered under Medicaid, then fuck those people. So far, I'm happy to say I've never been treated differently on Medicaid than I was during the 20 years I bought my own insurance at significant cost. So I like that feedback because it supported my view of the world. but the idea that truly, you know, you cannot look at someone and make assumptions. I have a totally frivolous oh, by the way, and I'll post it on our Facebook page. So the trend of fashion right now for the holiday season is for men to have glitter beards. And apparently this is catching on big in Portland. So Portland, I'm looking at you.
Fucking granola. Fucking granola fucks. Sorry, I got some friends in Portland, but come on, guys. Glitter beards are just a little bit crazy.
So was it you who made the joke about, boy, that would be really difficult during oral sex, or was it somebody else who said that on my Facebook page?
It wasn't me.
So, you know, just to kind of take us out a little bit on Neil Gaiman like we usually go, do you feel like we're ready to go there?
Oh, I believe we are totally
ready.
We're totally
ready. So I'm going to kind of tone this down a little bit because we've talked for so long. But I just want to make people very aware that Neil Gaiman is a high-profile supporter of the UN High Commission on Refugees. He's been very active in the plight of refugees, not just from Syria, but from all over the world. He did visit Syrians in Jordan in 2014, and there was a good brief interview by the BBC World Service. And basically, you know, he observed that he observed that Syrians are fleeing Syria because there's no food, they can't go outside safely. Some of the people he talked to had dispensations from their religious leaders to eat cats and dogs because there was no food. I mean, this is what we're talking about. People don't have basic food and safety needs met, and that's why people are fleeing So I just wanted to bring to people's attention that Neil Gaiman is very active in this cause. He just recently had a birthday. His birthday was November 12th, excuse me. And there was a blogger named Johan Thorsen who wrote 5 gifts you can give to Neil Gaiman on his birthday. And I'll try to remember to link this on our Facebook page too. But 2 of them were to read novels that Neil Gaiman loves, Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell by Susanna Clarke.
Awesome.
I haven't read it, but I'm going to have to. And then We Have Always Lived in the Castle, which I have not read either. He suggested that you support your local library, that you take time to read out loud to your kids, and finally that you donate to the UN High Commission on Refugees in support of Neil Gaiman. So happy birthday, Neil. I did donate to the UNHCR. So, and I've got a quote to take us out on, unless there's something you want. You saw Neil Gaiman.
I did.
Yeah.
It's really good. It was nice. 2 hours of reading and Q&A and everything. It's really good.
Very cool. So the quote that I would like to share from Neil Gaiman to take us out on is, "I came away from Jordan ashamed to be part of a race that treats its members so very badly, and simultaneously proud to be a part of the same human race as it does its best to help people who are hurt, who need refuge, safety, and dignity. We are all part of a huge family, the family of humanity, and we look after our family."
Absolutely.
So, guys,
let's do that.
Yeah, let's do that. You know, one of the things that I've tried to take into account in terms of my own reaction to this over the past couple of days is I'm coming not from a place of fear. I'm coming not from a place of anger. My emotions are really deep disappointment. So what I really want to see is not that disappointment, but see all of us take care of each other. I want to be proud to be a part of that same human race that does its best to help people who are hurt.
Absolutely.
So on that note, boy, I don't know what we're podcasting about next, but I hope everybody has a good Thanksgiving with their families, or if you are working, that you have a great shift and you go home to some peace. On that note, my friend,
enjoy your Thanksgiving.
Enjoy your Thanksgiving. Have a good one.
Save you.